You are listening to the fifth season of Rio Grande's For the Love of Jewelers podcast, a celebration of jewelers, the jewelry community, and the art of jewelry making. In this new season, we are excited to announce that there will be a rotating cast of Rio Grande Jewelry Tech team members hosting the show. We will share our love and knowledge of jewelry making, along with interviews featuring industry leaders, educators, and fellow jewelers in the community.
Good morning. Welcome to Tech Team Live on Tuesday. Today we're trying something new. We're on three different streaming platforms, so you may be watching us on YouTube, Facebook, and hopefully Instagram. I want to start everything off with our code for the month. It's Lindstrom1 to get 10% off anything Lindstrom. So any of you that have been looking at the Lindstrom pliers and everything, now's your chance to get 10% off Lindstrom. Today, my esteemed guest is Scott Bradford from the Tech Team. Scott Bradford is, he was my mentor when I first came to Rio Grande. So that's how I know he's esteemed. He's been very, very helpful from the very beginning. So Scott, tell us how you came to Rio Grande.
I was actually, before I came to Rio, I was working in Dallas as a bench jeweler, doing mainly custom pieces, bridal, that sort of thing. And then when 3D printers that were printing with resin came along, everyone was trying to figure out how to cast these materials. So I was doing a lot of research into that and posting my results online, and people started sending me resins to you know, figure out how to cast it and you know, give them the guidelines and that sort of thing. So that's kind of what led me to Rio, is I was effectively kind of doing technical support for jewelers before I came here.
So you were doing technical support before it was cool.
I guess. It's always been cool to
so,
me.
There's an open door for you, everybody. Anybody who wants to know about 3D printing, CAD design, here's your guy. So get your questions in. Start sending us your questions ask away. But I seem to recall you told me one time that the very first jewelry class you took was where?
Here at Rio Grande.
Yeah.
Actually, I took it was a basic bench skills class that was taught by my teammate, Phil Scott.
Yeah.
And I also took a metal forming class that was taught by my other teammate, Ronnie Modis. Yeah. So that was my first exposure into jewelry making, was those two classes here at Rio.
So what prompted you to even take the classes here? What was your desire to get into the jewelry world?
So I was actually a delivery driver for Jason's Deli. And I was hired off the street by Jostens to work in one of their manufacturing facilities in Denton, Texas. So I was running three CNC mills and doing a bit of wax cleanup because everything was being milled at the time. And that's what kind of whet my appetite for jewelry making. And oddly enough, a jeweler that lived in my parents' hometown was about to retire and was looking for somebody to pass his tools on to. So it was an opportunity to learn jewelry making.
So essentially you were a machinist, or you were a delivery driver night. Your side job was machinist? And that
I wouldn't say
jewelry?
Machinist. I mean, you know, it's a very well-oiled operation they have at Jostens. So I was one very small wheel on a very big machine. More than anything, it was kind of cleaning up waxes and doing some light wax carving and things like that. So,
so how long did you do that before you decided to take the classes and get into the jewelry thing?
I was at Jostens for less than a year before I ended up moving up to West Texas, where my family was and where this jeweler, his name was J.R. Brown. He was the one that decided to kind of mentor me and pass his jewelry tools on to me. And sadly, he passed away a few years after that, so he didn't get to see where I went.
You also have a formal education, don't you, in jewelry? You studied in Paris?
Mm-hmm. And well, Paris, Texas. the Texas Institute for Jewelry Technology in Paris, Texas, I have a deep love for that school, and I always will. They were able to give me the education to go from, you know, taking a few classes and making basic things to taking me to that professional level. So learning jewelry making, CAD/CAM, gemology, and watchmaking.
So needless to say, you highly recommend the school in Paris.
100%.
Yeah. A lot of people ask us, you know, where can I learn this and things like that. And that has become one of the places I recommend because of you, because of your recommendations about it. It's a fantastic school.
It really is.
And you're on the board there, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah. You help raise funds for them for different things and support them. And that's a great thing.
Anything I can do to help that school, I will jump on it.
Well, that's good.
They gave me something that I will treasure for the rest of my life.
Well, you know, knowledge is one of those things that, you know, nobody can take it away from you once you've got it. And it's sort of funny because I was just on a chat earlier before we came in here for the live, and the customer was wanting to learn the rudimentary aspects of soldering and things like that. And they had questions about how I got into my position and where I am and everything. And a lot of times people, I feel like they put barriers on themselves that are unrealistic. You know, I'm too old, or I don't have the right skill set or anything. And I don't know how to express to people enough that the knowledge is out there now. That's one of the things that we're here for on the tech team, is to help people and tell you, you know, there's more than one way to do things. And there's simple ways, there's challenging ways, there's expensive tools, there's less expensive tools, you can make your own tools. There's so many different ways to get things done. And that's the advantage of the team that we have. We have 8 people with 8 distinctly different backgrounds and everything. And we all bring something different to the table. We all bring different solutions to different problems and everything. And that's one of the reasons why we started this Tech Team Live on Tuesdays, is to help people to have this outlook or this ability to reach out to us. And with that, I have a rollover question from last week. Jeanette Salazar said, I'm curious about enameling. What are the best enamel products? That's the first question.
Thompson.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, Thompson enamels. That's what I use. And that's what I recommend. You know, you can, you know, enamels, I mean, Thompson, they have the best selection. You can still find like lump enamels at various places. Cause especially when you're firing transparent enamels, you can get clearer colors if you're actually grinding up your own lump, but that's a little harder to find nowadays.
Her next question was, what are the dimensions of the wire for cloisonné?
Oh, they vary a little bit, but they're super thin, somewhere in between 30 and 40 gauge. I think we have a few different sizes on our site.
But it's all fine silver.
Yeah, I think we have some gold too.
Do we? Okay.
But yeah, it's all super thin, 38, 40 gauge, that sort of thing. Because in most cases, you're using tweezers, you know, tweezers in both hands to actually manipulate the cloisonné wire to make those shapes. So you need it to be really thin and easy to move.
And then her last question, I'm just going to read it verbatim. I'm not quite sure how to interpret it. What are the materials, enamels, and environmental safety?
Well, as far as maybe how to protect yourself.
Yeah.
While you're working with enamels. So enamels, it is a powdered glass. So, you know, when it comes to the, you know, proper PPE and things like that, what I always recommend is, check the SDS. It's going to have the recommended PPE in there as far as any kind of face coverings or clothing or, you know, gloves or that sort of thing. So yeah, always check the SDS, to see what they recommend.
Yeah. That's, that's something I always tell people, the safety data sheet, that's what the SDS is. And, on most of our product pages, you should be able to find a safety data sheet. And in that safety data sheet, it's going to break down what the hazards of that product are, as well as what the recommended personal protective equipment is, as well as environmental recommendations and requirements based on OSHA and that kind of thing. So for anybody, whether you're a professional or a hobbyist, the SDS is a fantastic thing to utilize. And I encourage all of you out there, if you have any questions, get your questions in now, and especially the ones for Scott, and we'll get them answered. but going back to the enamel thing, I miss the classes we used to have, because I got to study enamels with Ricky Frank because of Rio Grande and everything. But Phil on our team is an amazing enamelist.
Absolutely.
And he does amazing work. So,
and John as well.
That's right. And so for people out there that are doing enamels, you know, we have people that have been doing this for decades now and know how to do this stuff. And if you have really specific questions, they'd be more than willing to help you. You can call in, you can email, and you can chat. The chat's kind of a roll of the dice, because we take turns on chat, so you never know who you're going to get. You might get Scott one day, you might get me another. You never know for sure.
Well, and luckily we have two Scotts on the team, and we both specialize in the exact same thing. So,
and
you know, if you get a Scott on chat, you know, and you have
and then we have Phil Scott.
Oh, so, yeah.
So
we're taking over.
And to take and to take a line from the previous Scott's interview, great Scott. Which brings me to my next question. It says you are one of our CAD design experts, which you are. And the question is, what would you recommend to someone who is getting started in CAD? How would you recommend somebody who wants to do CAD for jewelry get started?
The first question that I always ask is, what do you want to make? Because in the world of CAD design, there's kind of a what is commonly called hard edge modeling. That's going to be the majority of the jewelry that you see in the stores, you know, the big stores, engagement rings. That is typically done with a software that uses hard edge modeling. Now, on the other side of that, you have more sculptural pieces, mm-hmm. you know, say, you know, things inspired by nature or that sort of thing. Those two types of software work fundamentally differently. And there is a little bit of crossover between the two, but for the most part, they specialize. So looking at some of our offerings now and from the past, so take something like Rhino, Cross Gems or 3Design, those are considered more hard edge modeling, you know, more traditional type jewelry. And then we used to carry ZBrush as well. ZBrush is on the opposite side of that, is more of an organic mm-hmm. kind of sculptural thing. So, you know, depending on the types of pieces you want to make, you might want to do both. You might kind of gravitate towards one or the other. But that's usually the first question I ask is, what type of pieces are you really wanting to make?
It's also important, though, isn't it, to have some idea of parameters when it comes to jewelry? Because especially during COVID, we saw a lot of people doing amazing jewelry designs, but they were essentially undoable because the prongs were the wrong size, things like that. So it is important to have an understanding of what the minimal requirements are for a ring, for example, or a pair of earrings, that kind of thing.
100%. You need somewhat of a basis in jewelry making knowledge to do effective CAD design. So you need to know, you know, how thick to make a ring shank, how long do you need to make a prong, or how thick, you know, how much overlap can you get away with when you're planning this stuff. So I mean those are things that you know, I would recommend if you want to get into CAD design, take maybe a fabrication class or a stone setting class. You know, learn about what the person who's going to be setting these stones is going to have to go through when this design is created. So, and knowing that ahead of time, your CAD design will be so much more adaptable, so much easier for yourself or whoever's going to be setting them.
That's really important because we have a customization program here at Rio Grande now where people who do that kind of design work, they can send us those files. We'll cast them. We'll turn it into an actual piece of jewelry. And a lot of times the challenge is it's a phenomenal design, but if they don't have the right parameters, a lot of redesign has to occur, which, you know, increases the cost and everything like that. I know you and some of our teammates do that kind of redesign work and everything. Mm-hmm. So it is important to have an idea of what the minimal requirements are for a ring shank or what size dimensions for your prongs and that kinds of thing are.
So, yeah, like am I going to lose this detail when I start polishing?
Right.
Because I'm going to have to polish this piece, or is it going to be castable?
Well, and then
that sort of thing.
You know, with the 3D printers, you have grow lines and different things mm-hmm. depending on what those settings are and everything. I've got a Instagram question from Margarita. She says, I bought the Fuser 500 from Rio and have been having some problems with the investing part of the process, and I can't find many videos of that process. Can you do a more detailed video on how to use it? Maria, you're lucky because this is our Fuser 500 expert right here. So could you address her question specifically about the problem she's having with investing? She doesn't say specifically what they are, but are there any tricks you might suggest to her?
Well, for the most part, I mean, a lot of it is kind of assembling with the Fuser. You have the container where the powder and the water are going to go, and then you have the kind of flask chamber as well. So getting all that together can be kind of tricky. I mean, typically, you only have to mix for about 60 seconds. That's one of the nice mm-hmm. parts about vacuum mixing, is it really doesn't take all that long. Really, it's just the prep work of getting the flask cinched down in there, getting that container together, getting the tubing in the right place. It would kind of depend on what the issue might be. I would say reach out to us and we can have a discussion about the specifics of what's going on there. But yeah, in the video on our website, you can kind of see how all that stuff goes together. And the pour is really important as well, and making sure that everything is in the right direction and that your pour holes are in the right areas. So
right. Yeah. So there you go, Margarita. If you have more detailed questions, call in and ask for Scott, and he will be happy to help you with that.
Absolutely.
I've got another CAD question here though, and it is, do you have a favorite program to use for CAD jewelry design?
My personal favorite, it's the one I've been using the longest, and it was what I was originally trained on, and that's Rhino. Rhino is it's an instrument that I can pick up and immediately start playing now. So it's just from, you know, years and years of use. So that's usually my go-to, but, having worked at Rio and, you know, being, kind of one of the CAD guys here, I've also had the opportunity to learn, other programs as well. Like we have a plugin that's a jewelry plugin for Rhino called Cross Gems, mm-hmm. which adds all these really nice jewelry builders and, you know, different jewelry related things to Rhino, which is really nice. And then we have 3Design, which, I mean, 3Design was built from the ground up to be a jewelry CAD program, right. Which, I can't think of any others that really were designed that way. So, those are my go-tos, and I still use ZBrush quite a bit. We sold ZBrush for a time, and I still use that for some things because ZBrush is so unique as far as what it can do.
Yeah, I was always intrigued by ZBrush. I just never had the time to really get into it. Margarita said thank you, by the way. She'll reach out to you, Scott. So
Sounds good.
Be anticipating that.
Happy to help.
As far as the programs, though, is there one for somebody who's just getting started that you would say, this is the one that's going to be the easiest. You're going to get results the quickest for CAD.
The thing with CAD programs is, you know, if to get up to speed the fastest, you're going to need something with this significantly shortened learning curve. And that's going to be something like 3Design.
Mm-hmm.
Because 3Design has, in addition to being a CAD program that you can pretty much make anything you want, there's a lot of builders in there that will automate certain things, like mm-hmm. making heads and ring shanks and, you know, various types of settings, cluster settings and so forth.
Let me interrupt you real quick. So does that mean that 3Design already has those parameters factored in that we were talking about before?
For the most part, you can still adjust mm-hmm. as you want. So you can make things in any size you want. So, I mean, technically you could make it unprintable or uncastable,
right.
But the defaults are kind of there to kind of keep you in line a little bit.
So that's great.
So yeah, and through those builders, you're not having to make everything from scratch yourself. So the learning curve and the time at which you first start to, you know, the time that you're, you know, making some really nice stuff is much shorter than something that is more generalized and you have to build it all from scratch.
So what we're seeing in the industry now is people, especially during COVID, a lot of people really learned CAD. They had time on their hands. They were able to learn CAD and everything. And that just like dovetailed right into 3D printing. And you're one of our 3D printing experts. Mm-hmm. So we receive them here in our customization department. A lot of times we have people's 3D renderings, what they've grown, and they want to get those turned into jewelry and everything. But when you're going from CAD to 3D printing, what would you recommend? What 3D printers do you think are the best right now for that transition? You want to take it from concept to a product?
Well, when it comes to jewelry making, you really resin printing is where it's at. I mean, mm-hmm. Right now, the one that I use the most is the Form 3 from Form Labs, mainly because it just simplifies everything so well. I mean, you know, with a lot of the printers that are out there on the market that are coming from overseas, there's a lot of tweaking and adjusting of settings and things like that. Whereas the Form 3 just kind of automates all that. There's no calibrating. There's no settings of resins. I mean, it's just, you know, plunk in some resin, plunk in a tray, throw in a file and go. It's nice to be able to not have to worry about that side of it.
So what's the... Give us a little, in just a real quick insight into what's the process. You've got the CAD program, and from there, where do you go to get that finished printed product?
So the steps would be, you know, once the model is created in the CAD program, you have to bring it out in a file format that the 3D printer recognizes, mm-hmm. And that's most likely going to be what's called an STL file or stereolithography.
Okay.
So that is the file that a CAD program will recognize, and every 3D printer is going to have some accompanying software. That's main design is just to, you know, put as many pieces as you need onto the platform, add supports because mm-hmm. Supports are needed for 3D printing, and then that software will send it off to the printer to print. And then after that, depending on the type of material you choose, there are some that are just for prototyping. So if you want to show your customer, there's some that are used for molding, and then there's some that are castable. So then you would go into those respective areas, you know, a castable resin, you start investing in, you know, whatever casting procedure you're using, mold making, kind of same thing.
I got a question from YouTube from Dan Keith. Are you familiar with Plasticity CAD? Plasticity CAD?
I'm not.
I'm not either. I've got another question from YouTube. It has nothing to do with 3D printing. And this is probably a good question for Ronnie. But it's from, and I apologize on this name pronunciation, Radraksha Vegad. Hello, as a As every jeweler learns how to make your own silver solder, I would like to know how to make solder specifically for brass and copper jewelry to get yellowish joints.
I'm not as familiar when it comes to the metallurgy of making custom alloys like that. I can tell you what I've done in the past. It's a little pricier, but when it comes to brass, I use a 10 karat gold solder. Easy. Yep. And now they even have, I haven't tried some of the lower caratage ones. I know now they're getting down to like 8K solders, which I haven't tried on brass to see the color match. But that's always been my trick to soldering with brass, and it's a good color match.
That's my recommendation as well. And then for copper, what I tell people is pickle your copper piece in a contaminated pickle mm-hmm. with silver solder. And it'll copper plate that solder joint and match perfectly.
Yeah, put your piece in there, put any bit of steel right in there, and watch it. Don't walk away from it because it'll happen quick.
That's true. That's a fact. And then this is from Instagram. I don't know who sent this, but they want to know the most affordable way to solder titanium. I love these questions. What's the most affordable way to solder titanium, Scott?
If it were me, I don't know. When it comes to something like titanium, I might look into like a small arc welder or something like that.
Pulse arc welder. Pulse arc welder is probably going to be the cheapest because technically you can't solder titanium.
Correct.
It has an oxide layer on it that's going to prevent it from soldering. You can weld it, and you have to do that in an oxygen-reduced environment, which is the reason why we're recommending either a pulse arc welder. The best welds I've gotten on titanium are with the laser welder.
Yep.
I built those little boxes that I engraved, and that the laser welder did the best. But the pulse arc welder will work.
Well, and now, I mean, the pulse arc welders, like, the Impulse and the PJ, I mean, they're down in price to where, they're still a bit pricey, but, they're not quite in the range of what they used to be or what laser welders. I mean, we're talking about a couple thousand versus 10,000. So it kind of depends on your budget.
Right.
But you can weld titanium with those.
Absolutely. And the thing about the welders, and this is what I tell people all the time, they're really a one-time buy depending on what kind of jeweler you are. Mm-hmm. Like for a studio jeweler, you're probably only going to buy it once. You're not going to use it up. With somebody who owns a repair shop, yeah, you might end up buying one every 4 or 5 years, depending on what your production numbers are. But that welder is going to pay for itself in both situations.
Certainly.
It's going to pay for itself because, like, for example, with the titanium, you can't flame solder titanium. So your only choice is to weld it. Mm-hmm. And so if that's what you're going to, if you're going to do a lot of titanium, then it's one of those things that's cost of doing business.
Yeah, it works. I mean, yeah, and it's going to be the easiest method and relatively affordable and safe.
Exactly. That's one of the best things. I like the welders because there's so little cleanup. You know, you can get in there, you can weld it, and just fiber brush it, and you're done. It's nice. Mm-hmm. All right, we're getting close to the end of our 30 minutes here, the 30 minutes we've been allocated. But I've got a question that, don't let me forget, Lindstrom One, everybody, to get 10% off all Lindstrom products. And Lindstrom makes amazing pliers. I've got these two little set of Lindstrom pliers that are probably 15 years old. And my daughter, she does a little bit of enamel work, and those pliers are the ones that she stole from me. They are now, I guess they're now hers.
I worked in a shop one time where one of the jewelers would allow you to use any tool on his bench except for his Lindstrom cutters. You did not touch those. Those were his and his alone.
Yeah, they do make really good stuff. But I got a couple of questions for you that I like to ask. One of them is your 12-year-old self. If you could go back and tell your 12-year-old self anything, doesn't have to be jewel related. What advice would you give your 12-year-old self?
What advice would I give my 12-year-old self?
Yeah. You're going into middle school.
Buy Amazon stuff?
Yeah. Oh, good luck with that one, huh? Our last question, unless we get something in, and you guys out there in internet land, you can submit your questions even after we're done. Our social media person, if she can't answer them, she sends them to us. Shania does an amazing job with that, and we on the tech team help her get all the correct answers. But the last question I'm going to ask you, Scott, is do you have a favorite tool on your bench that you would recommend as a must-have for jewelers?
I don't know. I've talked about it on these live streams before, and honestly, I still think the Benchmate was the best purchase I ever made.
Yeah.
I got it right out of school. Thinking back to, you know, all the tools that I bought, you know, before and since then, I think that one by far is the most versatile, and it's the one that I still use the most because, yeah. There's all sorts of accessories for it now. I mean, one thing I do at my bench now, is if I'm ever doing any flex shaft polishing, there's actually this collar that, Kate Wolf makes.
Yeah.
So you can turn the Benchmate on its side, and use it like a little mini polishing motor.
Yeah.
And I love that because, you know, I'm always trying to think of ways to, go for the test of time and like anything I can do to save my hands,
right.
Make them go a little longer. I mean, holding a flex shaft in one hand and, you know, for hours and hours, I mean, you get that claw hand after a while. So, you know, if I can open it up and use both hands, that's great.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's what a lot of people don't realize. Our hands are actually take a beating. Because we're working with very small things and we're constantly holding them very tight. And a lot of people don't realize this, but that's a lot of strain on your fingers that eventually develops into arthritis and things like that. So the sooner somebody can incorporate something like the Benchmate to hold your flex shaft, which allows you to free up your hands and other mechanisms for holding your work, that's going to prolong your career and allow you to work safer and healthier throughout the long term. That's really a great recommendation. And with that, I want to thank everybody who has tuned in for our Tech Team Live on Tuesday. And Scott, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Jane. Look forward to doing this again. So like I said, if you guys have any additional questions, don't be afraid to put them in the comments. We'll get to them. Don't forget Lindstrom 1 for 10% off on all Lindstrom products until the end of April. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.